taxation number 20985, Rule 2.
Scott Realto.
Right. As I say, I hung on to this canvas material, which I thought would be very useful for lining the foxholes. I suppose, being a tidy sort of person, I thought myself, once we've dug into the ground, it'd be rather nice to have some sort of protection from stones and sand in your blankets. But I could only use this sort of stuff if we were going to be in an area for a certain time. But the time came when we would have as many as three or four moves in one day. So it was a question at that time that it was getting into September, October. The ground was beginning to get a little bit frosty and hard, so it became even more difficult to dig a foxhole than in the heat of the June summer.
Can you take me through what happened to you in Normandy itself, step by step, please?
Now, this is rather difficult. Being with regimental headquarters, it meant we had to send a report to brigade of all our activities during that certain time. Now, this was top secret, naturally, but at that time I was keeping a diary. Something else I could have been severely reprimanded for. This small diary I still have that I kept behind my field dressing in my uniform. And, of course, everything had to be written in pencil in those days because the biro hadn't been invented. And along with my diaries that I kept day by day, including all the letters that my mother saved during the war, that came into my possession when she died, I've really got a full story of my war years. So it's only by referring to those, while memory goes a little bit at this age, but I can refer, I know exactly where to look for stuff, which is the main thing.
Where did the unit go to at first from the beaches?
It went up through, I think I'd more or less pinpointed them on a map there. It went from Caen. Now, when we went through Caen, naturally, it was pretty much razed to the ground. We had a Czech halt in Caen, and I can remember looking down into this burning rubble, and I found a wall plate with Caen written on it in gold lettering. It was a little bit scorched, but intact. I picked it up, wrapped it up, and that particular item I carried through France, Belgium, Holland, onto the borders of Germany, and I was lucky in coming up in the draw for UK leave. Now, I brought this plate back to my home in Kennington. That must have been in January 1945, when we were still having heavy bombing raids in London. It went through the remainder of the London Blitz. And when I married in 1953, my wife was dusting, knocked it down, and it broke. Now, I hadn't been married very long, so I couldn't get too annoyed about it. But when I think it went through the bombing of Caen, the barrage, the bombing, it went through the London Blitz and survived, and to be knocked down in a little domestic scene was rather irritating. But I've still got it, I've stuck it together, and I've still got it hanging in my kitchen.
What successes did your unit have against tanks in Normandy?
Very much so. As I say, I've got them all listed in places. As I say, we had to send a report to brigade every so often of our activities, and I do have a copy of that if you're interested. I can't sort of mention them all by name because we were very successful. As I say, we got a battle honour, which we were allowed to wear, and that was in the form of a rectangle with the three colours, land, sea and air, and the bomb with the U-beak, and we were allowed to wear that beneath our Second Army badge.
What were the main problems in doing your job in Normandy?
There were no main problems, really. It was something you sort of grew into. I do remember going up to... When we went through Eindhoven, we liberated Eindhoven with the Canadians, and from there we were greeted by the inhabitants, naturally. Lots of hugs, kisses, flowers, wine, and so on. And we couldn't stay long because I had to join the recce group going through up to Nijmegen.
Did you have any narrow escapes yourself?
Going back to the period of time just outside Caen, when I said the second in command got killed, I was actually in my foxhole writing a letter, and I had a pot of ink, and actually when I wrote home I used a pen, and I had a pot of ink sitting on an ammunition box, and as soon as I heard this shelling outside, mortars dropping very close, the first thing I did very calmly was to screw the top on this pot of ink, because I didn't want that spilt everywhere. And it was only when the shelling stopped that I came out and found that what had happened outside.
Did you have much contact with civilians in Normandy?
Not an awful lot in Normandy, no. No, I can't remember. And of course, being heavy ACAC, we didn't get into towns or villages very much. We would be out in the countryside best part of the time. I found that came home to me when I've gone back on various trips over the years, when the courier on the coach would say, "Look, lads, if we come to any point where you'd like to stop off and talk about it, do so." Well, I found I couldn't do that because I didn't recognise any towns or villages as such, only going through them and sort of disembarking in the countryside. But it was when we got into... we were brought back to... for a rest at Christmas 44. And we were billeted with a Belgian family. It was the time of St. Nicholas. And it was the first time we'd had a roof over our head from the time of leaving England. And it's hard to imagine, after being sort of living in a foxhole, eating out of filthy old mess tin, and living in the ground, then to enter a house, a warm house, with loving people, sitting at a table on a firm chair, although sleeping on floorboards, but the fact that you had four walls around you and a roof over your head. Now, we stayed with them for about 3 days before going back into the line again.
So what were living conditions like in the field at regimental headquarters in the Low Countries?
Most of the time, we might take over church halls, or I can remember one time we cleared out an abattoir, got tractors to carry the carcasses out, got it all washed down, ready to sort of bed down, only to be told that we're moving again. I mean, this could happen any time.
Would you have to sleep out in the open?
When we got into Germany, we did manage to get requisitioned houses. But when I was possibly on duty, I would sleep in the three tonner, which could be a little bit dangerous during any shelling raids or whatever.
Can you take me through what happened in 1945 to you, please?
The end of the war, do you mean, possibly?
Right from the beginning of 45
yes.
to VE Day.
Luckily, I've got all this. I kept a note of all the places I'd stayed at, camped at. We finished up just outside Hamburg, a little place called Tesperhude, and we used to get transport into Hamburg for the Crusader Club. And by then, the armistice had come through, and we were invited into the officers' mess for drinks. And at that time, they used to serve rum, issue rum, during inclement weather, but we had to queue up with our mugs of tea. They would pour the rum into our mugs of tea. We weren't allowed to drink it neat. But when we went into the officers' mess at the end of the war, they were serving this issue rum more or less in half-pint glasses. And of course, you can imagine, after a few swigs of that, one did start feeling quite merry. Now, at that particular time, somebody mentioned, wouldn't it be nice to have a little bit of music? And they asked if anyone could play an accordion. I said, well, I actually took professional lessons in Brixton when I was in my teens. So somebody went up and down this German street knocking on doors and eventually came back with an accordion, which they strapped on me. And I can remember playing a few bars of Home on the Range. By then, the rum vapors were beginning to take hold. And I can remember just falling over on my back to a cacophony of sound as this accordion extended across my chest. I don't think the officers were too pleased about it, but it was a victory thing, so I lived through the day. But I do remember any swig of tea for the next two or three days after that did tend to cause the vapours to start whipping around again.
What was the Crusader Club?
It was for all the forces, all the armed forces, on Lake Ulster in Hamburg. And, of course, there was normally a little German band playing. Drinks were very cheap, and it was quite nice, quite nice.
So, during the occupation of Germany, you were in Hamburg?
Yes. And it was in Hamburg that I was told, I was called into the adjutant's office and told that there was an urgent War Office posting, and I was sent back to England. I spent a little time in Woolwich and then joined some freshly called up chaps going out to the Far East. So I spent Christmas 1945 in Doolally, just outside Bombay. I then went across to Calcutta, spent another period of time in a transit camp, across to Rangoon, another period of time in a camp, and then finally joined a field regiment up on the borders of Mandalay. And it was from there I finished my time. Because at that time they were working, discharge from the service was on an age and service basis. And I think my number was about 36, and it was about 20 or 24 when I went over to the Far East. So I was only out there for a short period of time. I was back in England in August 46.
How do you feel now about having served in the Royal Artillery in the war?
Absolutely. Well, looking back now, I forget my actual wording now. It's the very last paragraph. I'd like to refer to what I've actually said. I was finally homeward bound by the late summer of 46, to enjoy 3 months overseas leave and a return to civilian life. Looking back over the years in the forces, there were some good times and some exceedingly bad times, but having come through it all reasonably fit and healthy, I feel the war years have shown me the true value of life, and that in retrospect, I feel proud not to have missed this experience of a lifetime.
What were the worst times for you in the war?
I can't think of any specific times. I think it was pretty grim under shell fire. I mean, we were up the front best part of the time. I think it was hearing shells dropping around is the worst experience one can encounter in a way. I do remember losing a very close friend in Normandy. The Red Cross, YMCA, used to come round the field selling cakes, teas, cigarettes, chocolates, whatever. And I do remember we were queuing on one occasion when a German jet came over, must have seen this queue, and just dropped a bomb, and one of my pals was killed at that particular time. And unfortunately, I know where he's in the Jonkerbus cemetery just outside Eindhoven, I think, or Nijmegen. And I really want to visit his grave sometime.